Hello, my name is Sam Gazit. I'm a product manager here in the developer division at Microsoft. And today I'll be presenting about SharePoint and Office 2010 development with Visual Studio 2010. I'm particularly excited to be speaking about this topic today as it's part of our launch of Visual Studio 2010. So thank you for joining me. We've got a lot to cover today. Let's get started. So right off the top, SharePoint is a huge opportunity for developers. SharePoint adoption is skyrocketing. It's going through the roof. As of today, there are 100 million licenses of SharePoint, and that number is growing very, very, very rapidly. In terms of number of developers targeting SharePoint today, we have hundreds of thousands, and that number is approaching a million very quickly. Today, I'm going to spend some time talking about the opportunity for SharePoint developers, for .NET developers who want to pick up SharePoint development. Hopefully, after today's presentation, you'll be caught up on SharePoint and feel like you can take advantage of, you can program against SharePoint using your existing .NET development skills. Now, generally, learning new technology is really hard. Learning a specialized framework or technology requires you to invest both your personal cycles and sometimes your working hours as well. And oftentimes, these investments in learning these specialized skills don't pay off directly to mainstream projects. In other words, you spend your off hours reading blog posts and watching training videos and maybe going to a week-long training course, and ultimately, you're not able to leverage that new learning in your day-to-day development work. Now, this was certainly true for SharePoint development before Visual Studio 2010. There was a lot of specialized knowledge that you had to learn. As a SharePoint developer, you had to execute 17 manual steps in order to develop, debug, and deploy a customization. And of those 17, only one was actually writing the code for your SharePoint asset. In Visual Studio 2010, we've automated a lot of this manual process and made it approachable so that the skills that you transfer from your existing .NET development projects transfer directly to SharePoint, and you'll be able to be productive very, very quickly. And that's true for a variety of reasons, but the biggest is that you're building on a great foundation in SharePoint. If you really care about adding business logic and really translating business problems into applications as quickly as possible, why start from scratch? SharePoint offers a lot of functionality out of the box for you to take advantage of as a developer. When you're building on top of SharePoint, you're starting with a base platform that's composed of technologies that you already know and are familiar with, things like the .NET Framework, ASP.NET, and Windows Workflow Foundation for building workflows. These technologies you might already be using today. And built on top of this base platform is a set of capabilities called SharePoint Foundation 2010. These are a lot of capabilities that you can leverage in your existing applications. Things like BCS data integration for pulling in external data, document libraries, web portal, sort of your site structure, your navigation, your authentication, your authorization UI, web parts, wikis, all of these things are at your fingertips as a SharePoint developer. And on top of SharePoint Foundation 2010, is SharePoint Server 2010, and this adds another layer of capabilities for your application to take advantage of. Namely, when you think about SharePoint Server 2010, really it's six key areas of investment. One is traditional sites. This is your basic page navigation, your framework, enabling end users to create their own sites, to skin and deploy their own portals. There's communities, so there's brand new features in SharePoint 2010, including blogging and wikis. RSS is pulling in a lot of community content. There's content management, so the document libraries that you're familiar with, all sorts of rich media types can be stored in SharePoint. There's enterprise search with integrated instant messaging and integrated communication to find people and documents. And there's business insight. There's the ability to go and synthesize data and actually make decisions and compose them into things like dashboards and KPI and performance indicators, things that your customers are asking you for today come standard inside of SharePoint Server 2010. So lots of reasons to build on top of the SharePoint foundation. And Visual Studio 2010 helps improve your productivity when you're building against SharePoint. Now, the leftmost column here is around the tooling support in 2010, and we're going to spend the majority of our time talking about the great advancements in Visual Studio 2010 tooling. But let's shift our focus to sort of the other environmental factors involved in programming here, in programming in SharePoint. First and foremost, there was a big pain point in previous SharePoint development efforts. Namely, you had to have a server operating system. SharePoint had to run on a server. And therefore, developers that had a client OS for their development machine had to sort of incur attacks with connecting to that sort of other server operating system and doing their development work with that extra sort of connection there. In response, the SharePoint team has enabled SharePoint to run on Windows 7, 64-bit, or Vista SP1. This is going to enable developers that are using those operating systems as their development machines to go install SharePoint locally. Now, that's a big deal. In today's demonstrations, you'll see how I have SharePoint running locally and how I can debug and have a Cassini-like experience. Those of you that have worked with ASP.NET know that we have a lightweight web server built into Visual Studio, and that's a great experience. You don't have to manually deploy to IIS and sort of lengthen your develop debug cycles. Really, it's condensed into your own development machine, which is fantastic. Additionally, we've enabled source control for SharePoint assets inside of Team Foundation Server. And in our launch presentation, in our launch day, we have a standalone Team Foundation Server for Everyone presentation that sort of walks through the extra capabilities in TFS and the availability and how we're making TFS more broadly available. And so I'd encourage you to check that out. But in the context of SharePoint, again, we've enabled you to work with teams of any size to go and use version control and work item tracking and all of the TFS capabilities on your SharePoint assets. So it's going to improve team collaboration with other devs working on your SharePoint assets. And finally, we have SharePoint Designer 2010. And this is a free download that enables you as a developer or a designer or an end user or a business analyst to go and sort of visually lay out SharePoint pages or to create SharePoint artifacts that can then be pulled into Visual Studio 2010. So there's a great workflow between SharePoint Designer and VS 2010 that enables collaboration between you the dev and other people that are customizing and working on your SharePoint project. So in terms of the spectrum of developer productivity options, we have a really, really compelling offering. So let's spend the bulk of the day-to-day diving into Visual Studio 2010 specifically. One thing to note is that if you're building ASP.NET websites today, you're a .NET developer targeting ASP.NET, you are already a SharePoint developer, full stop. We've worked really hard to enable existing .NET developers to go build visual web parts inside of Visual Studio 2010 and leverage an almost exact experience as building web forms. In a demonstration that I'm about to jump into, you'll see how we leverage a familiar designer, we leverage a familiar a set of tools inside of Visual Studio. It's a very familiar F5 experience, and most importantly, the item that you're building is an ASP.NET user control. The same markup, the same controls, the same code behind. It is almost an identical process. So let's take a look at that. All right, so let's take a look at how we can leverage our existing ASP.NET development skills to go build what's known as a visual web part. Now here I've got an empty solution. I've got a project here called Feedback Web Part. I haven't done anything other than file new solution here, but I want to quickly walk you through the existing sort of structure of the default template here. First and foremost, we've got a packaging editor here, and I can double-click on this thing to show you sort of an empty designer, which is the case because it's a new project. But this is interesting for folks that have worked on SharePoint development before. Those of you that have worked on SharePoint know that deployment and packaging is kind of a pain point. And as you might have heard me say earlier, one of the 17, or a few of the 17 manual steps were sort of figuring out how to deploy and hand off your WSP files, your deployment packages. Here in Visual Studio 2010, as I add new features, Visual Studio will keep up with the features that I'm adding. They'll add them here in the left-hand side, and I can choose exactly which features I want to include in my deployment packages. So it enables me to customize exactly what's sort of sent out to SharePoint. It's an interesting aside here. But back to the demonstration at hand, let's go and add a visual web part. Now, visual web parts are new in both Visual Studio 2010 as well as in SharePoint 2010. And as I mentioned before, they enable me as an ASP.NET developer to feel right at home inside of SharePoint development. So I'll call this thing Feedback Web Part. Web Part Demo. Okay, let's try that. I will add it to my solution here. And let me close the packaging editor. Okay, so Visual Studio is going to open up something that should look very familiar to you if you've worked on web forms, for example. We have the web forms designer. We've got source view, we've got design view, we've got split view. This is something that that you should be familiar working with. And in fact, investigating our Solution Explorer shows that we've added an ASP.NET user control to our solution. So it's the experience of building a visual web part is almost identical to that of building an ASP.NET user control. In fact, that's exactly what you're doing. So with that, let me go and open up my toolbox here. Again, should be a familiar set of controls. These are the controls that are available to me as an ASP.NET developer. I can poke into my data controls here, and I can grab a list view. List view is a pretty standard control. And you can see when I add it here, I get sort of the split editing designing experience. That's great. Rather than sort of style this list view in front of you guys, I've got a bit of markup here to simplify things a little bit. So I'm going to go and into my HTML snippets, and I'm going to drop in my list view. So let's sort of synchronize the designer here. You can see that I've done a bit of styling, and looking at the markup here, it should be fairly straightforward. We've got a list view. We set the layout template, item templates. We're doing a bit of styling here. Really should be very, very straightforward. And we want to go and data bind this particular web part to an external data service that we have. Those of you that have seen the Windows development session, our launch session, have seen the presenter build this particular data service. In this demo, I'm just going to consume it. So I'll go to Add Service Reference, and I'll sort of manually type out the location of this service. We've got it deployed locally. I happen to memorize the port number, which is helpful. And type it. We hit go here. Visual Studio is going to look and sort of discover this particular service. Here it is. It's called Blue Yonder Airline Entities. And this is just a model that we're exposing in a RESTful way using WCF data services to go and consume in all the different clients that we have. So SharePoint's no example. We're going to consume that here. And we're going to call that Blue Yonder. Yonder data. Excellent. Now that we've added that to our project, we want to add a bit of code behind to go and do some data binding between that service and the markup that we just laid out here for our visual web part. So we're going to go and jump into the code behind. Ah, here's our friend PageLoad. Again, those of you that worked with ASP.NET, I keep sort of beating this to death, but this should be very, very familiar. It's like building an ASP.NET page here. And so let me add a quick snippet here so that I don't have to type. And we're going to use web part code behind. Great. And nothing too crazy happening here. We're creating a proxy to the data service that we just set up. This is our core service, and we have a set of entities. And we're going to invoke the. We're going to go and get all the feedback by invoking the proxy here. We're going to set that as a data source, and we're going to data bind our list view. Shouldn't be too complicated, but here comes the magic. Watch this. Those of you that have worked with SharePoint before know that this is truly groundbreaking. I'm going to hit F5. Now, as I do this, I want to take a moment here and just reach out to the SharePoint developers in the crowd. Those of you that have worked on this before, if you were here live with me, you'd be applauding. Again, 17 manual steps. You see what Visual Studio is doing down here. We'll modify the web config. It is retracting existing solutions. It is deploying the features that I specify in the packaging tool. It is attaching the debugger to the right process. It is doing all of the things that were tedious and manual and very, very painful for SharePoint developers before. And it's popping up a browser that has the SharePoint site that's running locally on Windows 7. It just doesn't get that much better in terms of development experience, especially when compared to the world before Visual Studio 2010. And those of you that have worked on SharePoint before know that this is the point in the demonstration which you should get up from your seat, go to the back, grab some coffee, drink some coffee, chat about what's going on, come back in, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes when I sort of have everything configured to do my debugging. But here you can see that we're loading up SharePoint relatively quickly here. And we're going to have SharePoint up and running. You'll see that I'll be able to interact with my SharePoint site and sort of switch context back and forth. So here I've got my SharePoint site loaded. I'd like to go edit this page. And we'll just hit edit here. And we're going to insert a web part. This is kind of the end user experience, but for me as a dev, I'm doing some debugging right now. And I've got the feedback web part demo here. This is what we were just working on. Now Visual Studio has sort of pushed that into the right place, enabled me to go and pick that here and hit add. Now as I hit add, something really magical is going to happen. Can anyone guess what's going to happen? Boom! We hit the breakpoint back into Visual Studio. That means I've got full debugging support here. I've got autos, watch variables, I've got a call stack, I've got all the things that I'm used to when I'm debugging any other application type. And I've got it all at my fingertips here. I can jump back and forth between my SharePoint site, running locally on my dev machine, and Visual Studio. That is huge, huge, huge. So I'll clear out of this breakpoint. I'll hit F5 and I'll jump back into my SharePoint site here. And just like that, you'll see that we've got our web part loaded. Again, this web part is polling consuming the data from my data service and displaying it in a nice formatted way here. And all in all, it took me about, I don't know, 10 minutes to build that. So as an ASP.NET developer, don't be afraid. SharePoint is approachable. Let me hit save here. Now, one thing I want to call out, for those developers that have worked with ASP.NET, you might be familiar with ASP.NET Trace, and that helps you sort of do some debugging and figure out some performance issues, potential performance issues with your websites. Well, in SharePoint 2010, we've enabled something very similar, and it's called the Developer Dashboard. So I'm going to turn that on here by clicking up here on the right. And I'll scroll down to my page, the bottom, and I'll see some sort of developer-focused information. Most importantly, we'll notice that we have sort of timings for web part offsets. And that is, I can notice the web part that I built, feedback web part demo, is taking a fair amount of time to load. Now, if I were a junior developer, on the other hand, I can take a look at what the experience would be for me. So let me go and add another web part. This is, in this demonstration, this web part was built by another developer on my team who clearly is not as skilled as I am. I am the world's best developer / marketing guy. And I'm going to add the junior developer web part and see how we can see what kind of information comes back in the developer dashboard. So I've added that here. We didn't have a breakpoint, so we come back into SharePoint, come back to the developer dashboard, and you'll see that while my web part's actually running pretty well, the junior developer web part is taking an insane amount of time to load. So we need to go do a code review with our colleague here. But you can see how I have some great useful information that I can leverage to go build some great visual web parts. So with that, let me jump back into the presentation. The most important takeaway from that demonstration is that we have taken 17 manual steps that existed for SharePoint developers before Visual Studio 2010, and we've placed all of that power right here. We've placed it right in your index finger. When you hit F5, Visual Studio automates those 17 manual steps. It goes and removes the necessity for writing hard-coded XML files, for signing assemblies, for specifying packaging structure, for running admin tools, for doing all of these manual tedious tasks. They're all automated inside of Visual Studio 2010. And you can focus on the one step that you really care about, which is writing the code for your customization. And that's a big deal. There's a lot of magic there. And so I just want to call attention to that. So moving into the rest of the presentation here, we're going to focus on three key scenarios that SharePoint developers can target here. The first is connecting people with data. This is a really common scenario and something that is very much suited for SharePoint development. The second is enabling rich visualization. So once you build a customization, how do you make your users fall in love with that particular SharePoint asset? And more importantly, how do you enable them to visualize the data and make better decisions based on those visualizations? And finally, we're going to see how you can take your application, take your code, take your logic, and place it exactly in the place where end users make most of their decisions, inside of Microsoft Office 2010 client. As I mentioned, one of the most common scenarios is connecting people and data. Oftentimes, you'll see development projects built around sort of the forms over data or line of business application experience. That is, taking a data source, servicing it inside of an application, enabling your end user to read, understand, synthesize, and act on that data, modify it, and just have sort of the basic create, update, delete operations on that data. And so let's take a quick look at how we can take the web part that we just built, and we can enable end users to go pull external data outside of SharePoint, pull it into that SharePoint customization, and then act on that data. Okay, so let's take a look at how we can take the web part that we built in the last demonstration and extend and enhance it to enable an end user to go pull out line of business data and act on that data. So here I've got my web part project that we were just working on. What I'd like to do now is take advantage of a new feature in SharePoint 2010 called Business Connectivity Services. To do that, I'm going to add a new item into my project here, and I'm going to add a business data connectivity model. And I'll call this feedback model. Now the goal here is to go build a data model that I expose to my end user and enable my end user to party on. And so he doesn't have to have a specialized application outside of SharePoint to go pull in external data. He can do it directly inside of the environment that he works in day to day, namely SharePoint. So we'll hit add here. And as we do that, Visual Studio is going to open up our entity design surface here. And it's going to enable me to go specify which entities I want to surface to my end user. And as you might recall from the last demonstration, we had a service, our Blue Yonder data service. This is, again, a WCF data service that we're using to expose our database in a RESTful way. We want to build our entity model on top of Blue Yonder data. So Visual Studio has the entity designer in sort of a model-first approach. Namely, I go and define my data model sequentially. And sort of expose what I want to. And so rather than sort of poking through the design surface and building this myself, let me just go into the underlying XML and sort of replace what we have and make a bit of progress here a little bit more quickly. So to do that, I will open up a text editor. Again, I could certainly do this with the design surface in VS, but for the sake of time, let's go and just do this very quickly. Great. And we need to make sure that this is named the same as my project here. So I'll call this feedback web part. And Visual Studio will sort of adjust the second instance here. And that, again, matches my project name. So fantastic. And we can go back to my designer here. And we can take a look at how we've sort of made this change, and it's reflected here in the design surface. So I can go back and forth between XML and designer. But again, I've done that for the sake of simplicity. I also want to go and define what's the nature of my entity. And again, I'll do that through a quick code snippet here rather than typing it out. My code snippets. This is called feedback model. Great. So here I'm choosing to expose three properties: ID, message, and mileage level. Again, these are attributes of my database that I'm pulling in and exposing as properties in the feedback model. And finally, I need to go and update my entity service. This is the service that that SharePoint uses to go and communicate with entities. So I will replace the stock code here. Again, this is sort of hello world code. You can see it here. Rather than type it out, I'm going to replace it. Now, not a lot of magic here. Right? Effectively, we're doing something similar to what we did in the web part code behind. We're taking the Blue Yonder airline entities, our WCF data service, and we are creating a proxy. We're going to do a bit of link code against that proxy. And we're dynamically generating our entity and setting the right properties on that entity based on what comes back from that web service call. And then we're returning that entity. And so with that, let's take a look at how we can sort of build and deploy and see the end user experience for working with our data model. So again, Visual Studio is doing a lot of work on our behalf here. You can see that it's retracting existing files. It's adding a solution, deploying the solution. It's doing a lot of those manual 17 steps, and it pops up SharePoint for me, and I can sort of put on the hat of the end user now and take a look at what my new sort of BCD connection looks like. And to do that, I'm going to go and grab more options, and I'm going to create what's called an external list. External list is the way that SharePoint handles external data. It's going to take that data, namely that my Blue Yonder database, and it's going to expose it to the end user in list form. So I'll hit create here, and I'll call this thing feedback. And now I'm going to specify which business data connectivity model I want. So I've got two in here. This is the one that we just built. It's feedback, feedback web part, and I'll add that. Great. Now let's hit create here. And if all goes to plan, fantastic. We now have a list of all of that external data. So that should be actually exciting to you as a developer. And what does that mean? That means that although we can surface our external data inside of WebPart as a developer, we really want the end user to be able to party on that data in a familiar SharePoint paradigm. So instead of surfacing it as a WebPart, we've now surfaced it as a list. And the end user can then sort of take that list and sort of mash it up with other lists or sort of party on that data himself or herself. And so that's a great way of sort of empowering end users. Great. So let's take a look at how we can improve the end user experience by removing one of the manual steps, which is see a piece of feedback come in here, go into the new task list here, add a new item to this task list. That's kind of a bit tedious. And in fact, if we go back to our homepage, you'll notice that I can actually do that directly from the web part. Right? Remember, the web part was a visual way to represent that this particular feedback list. And I'd like to be able to enable my end user to sort of pop open a dialog right from that web part. In fact, let's take a look at that so I can show you what I mean. You might remember in the markup for this web part, I added this little button here. I'd like to enable the end user to click on this button and manually kick off a task without having to go into the task list, add a new task, fill out all the information there. Let's do it directly from this particular web part. So to do that, let me go back to my task list here. And I want to extend the task list by adding a few more columns. And I want to add the columns from my BDC model. So I'll go into the list, and I want to create a new column. And I'm going to name this column feedback. And I'm going to leverage external data to create this column. And I'm going to grab, I'm going to pick my BDC model here. Again, this is the same step that I did in order to display this data in a list format. Here I'm going to leverage it to add a column to an existing task list. And I'll hit select all fields. And this way, I'll take the ID field, the message field, and the mileage level field, and I'll display that directly into this task list. Effectively, what I'm doing is a join on my external data and the data that the user enters here inside of this task SharePoint list. So I'll hit OK. OK. Now, once I have that here, you'll notice feedback. I've got feedback message. I've got feedback mileage level. I've got a lot of new columns that are added, and if I hit a new item here, you can see that I can go and specify a few new things here. I can specify the title, specify all the columns, and then when I get to feedback, I as the end user have to go and connect to that data model again, and then I've got to go pick out which one of these things I want to attach it to, and that's a tedious process. So let's see if we can add some client-side JScript to improve that experience. So with that, let me jump back here into the context of Visual Studio. We're going to close out SharePoint. We're going to jump back into the markup here for our web part. Again, we want to extend that web part to enable that button to pop up a modal dialog. So I'll do that by quickly adding some script here. Now, new in Visual Studio 2010 is the ability to use HTML snippets to sort of improve productivity. So I've got, for example, a script snippet. Again, this is a nice little productivity-enhancing feature. Not hugely revolutionary, but it's great to have markup at my fingertips where I can quickly write my script tags here. And then I'm going to leverage a custom JScript bit of code here. And there's a lot that's happening, so I want to quickly go over what we've got here. First thing we're doing is we're you're calling the sort of SharePoint client context. This is the SharePoint object model, and this enables me to go and interact with SharePoint from sort of a client-side code here. I can do it from JScript, or I can do it from Silverlight. As you'll see in a future demo, Silverlight has a set of assemblies that it ships to enable this kind of experience from Silverlight code. So what I'm doing, again, is I'm going to pull SharePoint. I'm grabbing back all my tasks. I'm looking for ones that match this particular piece of feedback, and I'm pre-populating some data. I'm executing this query asynchronously. I'm pre-populating some data, and then I'm popping up a modal dialog. Now, I'm doing that by calling the modal dialog piece of functionality here. Now, SharePoint 2010 is leveraging ASP.NET Ajax to add Ajax interactivity. As you might have seen me hit save and see the little sort of Ajaxified save dialog pop up. Here I'm going to, again, call this modal dialog framework to pop up exactly when I want it to, and I can do that in an Ajaxified way. So let's control F5. Let's go pop open our SharePoint site, and let's see that in action. Fantastic. So I've got my web part loaded. Now let me click on my Add Task button. This is going to pop up a fantastic. It's going to pop up a modal dialog here. We'll give it just a second to pop up our dialog. Again, this is saving our end user a manual step of going into the task list, adding a task from sort of the list view. Instead, we're doing it sort of in an Ajaxified way, directly from the web part that we created. And you can see that the feedback ID is already associated. Namely, it's already done that join for us. So we can create a new task called, customer keeps on complaining, won't fix. And that task is then saved. Now, in the Blue Yonder scenario, I would assign that task to one of the employees that's sort of chartered with fixing customer complaints. That task would then appear here in the task list, and then that employee would have to go and execute this task. Now, how do we verify that this has actually been completed? You notice that we've got columns here like mileage level. We've got a platinum customer. We want to be able to actually define a little bit of custom business logic to say, to basically invoke a workflow to determine what should happen based on the mileage level. In other words, I just created this task for John, who's going to be sort of working with the customer to resolve the issue. And based on the mileage level, I want to be able to make sure that John completes his work in a timely manner. Now, I could do that by calling John down and saying, hey, John, have you worked on the customer keeps complaining, won't fix task? Or I can kick off a workflow to automatically pull and see if John has done this work himself. So let's go back into Visual Studio 2010 and see how we can add a workflow to make this happen. Fantastic. So I'll jump back into Visual Studio here. Now what I'd like to do is add a new item to our project. This is yet another new template inside of Visual Studio 2010. In fact, I should point out that there was support for workflows in previous versions of Visual Studio, but we've enhanced support for building workflows inside of 2010. So I'll pick a sequential workflow, and I'll call this escalate. Escalate. And I'll add it to my project. Now, Wizard pops up here, and it asks me for a few things. What do I want to assign it to a site? Namely, do I want it at the site level, or do I want it at the list level? And I'm going to focus on the list level for the time being. And I get to decide where I want to, which particular list I want to associate it with. So I want to associate it with the task list. And I get to decide where to put the workflow history. I happen to have a workflow history folder here. And I get to decide the task list to display the workflow task available to each workflow participant. And we already have a pre-built one called Escalate Platinum Complaints. Namely, if a task is created and there's a platinum status, this should go directly into the Escalate Platinum Complaints list. Excellent. And we'll uncheck the user starts this manually because we want this to happen immediately when a new task is added, not sort of a manual kickoff. And we'll hit finish. Now Visual Studio will open up the Windows Workflow Foundation Designer. This enables me to sort of drag and drop activities to define the business logic and to define the workflow that that should happen every time a new task is added. Great, so I've got my workflow designer loaded here. Rather than me go and write out the workflow by hand, I'm going to go and import one that's nearly complete. We'll see how it was built. So to do that, I'm going to jump into my demo folder here. I'm going to grab the Escalate Platinum Complaints workflow. This is our nearly complete version. I'm going to open up the project system, and I'll just paste that into the project system. And then we want to go back into Visual Studio and make sure that Visual Studio recognizes that new item. And that new item is here. It's Escalate Platinum Complaints. So we'll include it in the project. And we will open it up. Aha! Excellent. So you can see that we've got our workflow started here. We've done some work to go and respond to a complaint being added. We do sort of a is platinum check, where we check if it's platinum or not platinum. And if it's not platinum, we don't really do anything. If it is platinum, boy, we got to get on that in a hurry. And so we wait for a certain amount of time, and then we want to check whether or not the workflow item has changed. So we'll drag and drop that activity here into my designer. And then I want to go and just fix it up a bit, add a few changes here. Voila. We'll hit save, and we'll come in and make sure that we've associated this workflow with the right list here. So we'll go and we'll go and make sure that we're setting the right history folder here. So we'll go into the history list. Visual Studio is going to pop up the designer, and we're going to specify the name of the workflow. It's called Escalate Platinum Complaints. Hit next. And we want to, again, associate it, like we did before with the workflow that we kind of backed out of, we'll associate it with the right set of lists here. So the task list. We'll hit next. And we don't want to... Excellent. And now let's go and actually write a bit of code behind for what happens when the workflow item is changed. So we'll add in a code snippet here. And we're going to call this workflow event. Great. And we're going to check when the percentage complete here changes. And then we're going to act based on that. So with that, let's F5 here. We're going to go back to the home page, and we're going to see our workflow has been added, is in action. All right. Excellent. So we'll add a task. And I'll make sure that it's a platinum customer. And I'll say, John, please ensure to treat this customer with respect. And again, it's associated down here to the right piece of feedback. It's feedback number 4. And I can sort of set the status. I can set all of the things that I need to do to create a new task. And now when we add that task, you'll see sort of an Ajaxified dialog pop up. We can go into our task list. And we can indeed verify that this new task now comes with a workflow status. And it says, has the Escalate Platinum Complaints workflow been kicked off? And in fact, it has. Right? So here what we've done is we've extended the functionality to enable a custom workflow that models our company's sort of business process and then kicks that off every time a new task is added. Wow, we saw a lot in that demonstration. So let's take a moment to recap. One, we saw how we can use the business data connectivity services to go take an external database. In that case, we used our Blue Yonder database. We exposed it through a WCF service. We consumed that service, and then we exposed it again through our BDC data model. And that last layer enables end users to go pull in that data and work with it themselves. Additionally, we went and extended the web part to add a bit of client-side script to enable our end users to create a task directly from the web part. So rather than going to the task list and sort of manually creating a new task, they can look at incoming complaints from the web part, and they can click on the little button that we added that launches an Ajax-based task dialog for them to fill that out. Finally, we went and improved the experience even more by wiring up that external data directly into that dialog so that they don't have to go through the extra manual step. And then we added a workflow to go and dictate what happens when the end user doesn't respond to these incoming pieces of customer feedback in a timely manner. So what we've seen is we've taken external data, we've pulled it into SharePoint, we've enabled our end users to understand, synthesize, and react to it, and then we've even programmed a workflow that automates the process of monitoring how work is done. So lots of great stuff in that particular demonstration. So let's move on to the second scenario here, which is enabling rich visualizations. Now, you've built some great assets inside of SharePoint, but you really want to take advantage of Silverlight to light up and create what are called rich internet applications, or RIAs. Silverlight offers a lot of new capabilities. Silverlight 3 provided an out-of-browser capability, and Silverlight 4 builds on that capability to enable Silverlight applications to go reach outside of the sandbox, to go do things like comm automation, to go access data on the desktop, and to really have a great sort of desktop experience for Silverlight customizations. And you can take advantage of that directly from inside of SharePoint. Really, there are three key ways to do that. What's called no-touch, low-touch, and high-touch. As you might imagine, low-touch is building a Silverlight application, voila, done. Low-touch is then taking that Silverlight application and dropping it directly inside of a SharePoint web part. Turns out that SharePoint 2010 has a pre-built Silverlight web part, and your end user just has to find the URL of your Silverlight asset, your ZAP file, drop that URL into that Silverlight web part, and voila, they're now consuming Silverlight directly inside of a pre-built web part. That's low touch. What we're going to take a look at is high touch. This is the most interesting sort of integration between Silverlight and SharePoint. And here what you're doing is taking it a step further and leveraging what's called the client object model to go and pull SharePoint data into your Silverlight asset. You can do that both from client-side script. You can also do it through specialized Silverlight assemblies that ship with SharePoint 2010. So we're going to take a look at how we can build a SharePoint asset that goes and pulls SharePoint data and then displays it in a visual way and enables end users to go make better business decisions based on this visualization. So let's take a look at how we can take our SharePoint customization and extend it to enable the end user to visualize data using Silverlight. So I've got Visual Studio. I'm going to quickly create a new Silverlight application. And we'll call this Silverlight Viz. And I'll use Silverlight 4. We're going to take advantage of a new capability or an enhanced capability in Silverlight 4 for out-of-browser applications. So now as I open this up, Visual Studio lays down the right project structure for me. It creates a test website as well as a Silverlight asset that I'm going to customize here. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to take advantage of something called the client object model. In SharePoint 2010, there's a set of assemblies that enable me to communicate with the SharePoint server from client-side script or from my Silverlight code. So let me go add a reference to these particular assemblies here. They happen to be located in the client bin folder in my SharePoint install. So I'll go and grab them. They're called Microsoft.SharePoint.Client.Silverlight, Microsoft.SharePoint.Client.Silverlight.Runtime. We're going to add these guys. Excellent. Now that I've got my references, I'm going to go and start designing my customization here. And so to do that, I'm going to pin my toolbox. And I'll take advantage of a new set of controls in Silverlight, part of the Silverlight control toolkit. New in the Silverlight control toolkit are controls that help me do sort of core line of business functions. And I want to make use of a chart control. So I'll drag and drop that onto my design surface here. Now in Visual Studio 2010, we have support for split view designer here between sort of a WYSIWYG design editor as well as the underlying XAML. And Visual Studio will keep those changes in sync. So as I drag and drop the chart control here, it's adding the right XAML markup underneath. Now I want to go and do a little work on the layout. So I will do that in my properties grid here. Excellent. So we've got our chart control. Now let's go and write a little code to wire it up to some data. Excellent. And rather than writing this out from scratch, I'm going to go and take advantage of a code snippet. I've got some pre-written code here. My code snippets, Silverlight. Excellent. As you can see in this code snippet, what we're doing here is we're taking advantage of the Microsoft.SharePoint.client client context, and we're connecting to our SharePoint site. And once we've connected to our SharePoint site, we're going to grab some data from the customer complaints historical list. This is going to let us grab that data in and visualize it in our chart control. And I've got a bit of work already done here on in terms of the markup, so let me go and grab that. Let me go to the end, grab that, and I'll go back into my XAML here, and I'll just replace the default toolkit XAML, charting control XAML. Let's go and delete all of that here. Excellent. And I'll just paste in the XAML. Excellent. So, and of course you want to get rid of our comment there. Great. So now let's go and make one last change to our website. As I mentioned before, I'd like to show how we can use Silverlight in the context of our SharePoint site as well as outside on the end user's desktop. And to do that, we're going to go and change some of the project settings here. First thing we want to do is enable Silverlight out-of-browser support. So we'll do that by clicking a box here. And then we want to make sure that this thing is running in elevated trust when it's outside of the browser. Great. So we've got our project set up. Let's hit F5 and see what we've got. So Visual Studio is going to open up our test website. And embedded in the test website is our new Silverlight asset. Give it a second to load here. All right. So let's go and install this thing onto the computer. Okay. We'll install. Now it's going to open up the application outside of the context of the browser. We're now running on the desktop. And as you can see, we've got our chart control populated with data that we pulled out of SharePoint. And so by using the client object model, we're able to go and leverage SharePoint data in our Silverlight customization. And we can plug this into Silverlight very, very quickly. To do that, I'd like to go and open up my SharePoint site. Oh, let's get out of the debugger here. Let's go and open up the homepage for our SharePoint site. That's the customer relations demo. And I'm going to get rid of this stock image here. It's kind of a nice little folder, but I'm going to edit it out. And I can replace that image with a web part. And this is a special web part that ships as part of, that is part of SharePoint Server 2010. And it's here in the Media and Content folder. It's a Silverlight web part. Now, this sort of stock pre-built Silverlight web part that comes as part of SharePoint enables me as the end user to point to a Silverlight asset, namely a zap file. Now, we just built one of those, and we have it pre-deployed out. So let's just go and add our web part. And let's go and point it to our pre-existing deployed SharePoint asset. And that's in customer relations demo. Site assets, and then blue yonder dot charts dot zap file. Oops, it is a zap file. Great. Now SharePoint is going to drop it into my home page here. Uh-huh. And you can see that same Silverlight web part now exists as part of my SharePoint homepage. I, as an end user, can see all of the complaints from the various mileage levels. And I can visualize that data very quickly to help me make better business decisions. And we've seen how we can have Silverlight running out on the browser in the context of a web page or right inside of my my SharePoint site. So let's recap what we've just seen. We were able to take an existing SharePoint customization, namely taking feedback from customers and exposing it in a nicely styled list, and take that a step further. Take that data and pull it into a Silverlight charting control. Now, this Silverlight charting control leveraged the client object model to go and pull data out of SharePoint and take that list data and visualize it in a nice way. So my end user can react to the data in a more visual way and make better decisions. We then enable the end user of our Silverlight web part to go and pull that out on the desktop. So we have a great continuum between sort of the in-browser experience and the desktop experience for our SharePoint user. So Silverlight really helps us light up our SharePoint customizations. Great. Now let's move into the third and final scenario here. This is taking your application where your end users are. Now, Office 2010 is a huge, huge leap forward for end users, right? It's a new suite of productivity tools from, you know, Excel to PowerPoint to Word, all the things that you're used to. And in Visual Studio 2010, we have a specialized set of tools that help you build Office client extensions. Now, there are a lot of advantages to doing this. You can build solutions that match internal processes. You can integrate your data exactly where those decisions are made. Namely, I have an information worker that spends all their day inside of Excel. Rather than reinvent the wheel, build a new UI for them to go and learn, let's drop our logic, our application, directly inside of Excel. And you can build instantly familiar applications. As I mentioned, there's no need to relearn UI. It should be familiar and natural for an Excel user to go load up your customization and make use of it directly inside of Excel. And the fourth and final thing is we're now able to pull out data from SharePoint, leveraging the Open Data Protocol, OData, and pull that into our Excel customization. Let's take a look at a demonstration on how we can take our customization, our application, and put it directly in the hands of end users who are spending most of their days inside of client applications like Office Client. So here I'd like to leverage Visual Studio to build an Excel add-in. So I'll go and add a new Excel add-in project. New in Visual Studio 2010 is the ability to target both Excel 2007 as well as Excel 2010. And of course, you can target other Office client applications like PowerPoint and Word. Here we're going to work with Excel. And those of you familiar with Office development should be familiar with building a customization. This feature has been around for a few versions of Visual Studio, but new in this release is the ability to go and visually design a ribbon. So I can do that by adding a new item to my project. And I'll pick the ribbon visual designer here. Now, what's great about designing a ribbon is it blends in exactly with the user experience that end users are familiar with as they work with Excel 2010. Namely, I can create a custom tab here that fits directly into all the other tabs that are used as part of the application, and I can sort of seamlessly integrate my particular business logic and my application directly inside of Excel without any learning curve for the end user. They don't have to learn specialized UI. It's just part of their sort of productive environment. And as you might imagine, we have all of the standard controls that you'd expect from a visual designer. If you've worked with the Web Forms designer or the WinForms designer or the WPF designer, you can sort of drag and drop into this visual surface here. And this is no exception. So I'll grab a button here. I'll drag and drop it into the designer. Of course, I could modify its properties in the property grid. I could set visual images. I could do lots of different things. And I can also get the standard event handling control when I double-click. So we've got sort of a fully functional ribbon designer here. Now, it turns out that I've done a bit of work on this project, and what I'd really like to do is connect to SharePoint and pull in some SharePoint into this Excel customization. So we'll jump into a project that has a bit more work done. It's the same Excel add-in that we're working on, but this time I'd like to go and pull in SharePoint data. So to do that, I'm going to add a service reference. Now, in all the other demonstrations, we were pulling data out of SharePoint, but we're doing it from inside the context of a SharePoint customization or extension. Here, we're outside of SharePoint. We're in Excel, and we're still able to leverage that SharePoint data because SharePoint 2010 supports the OData protocol. And that enables me to type in a URI here, or to paste in a URI, that points to our SharePoint server, namely the customer relations demo site, and it pulls back some of the list data here. So I can discover that service. Again, I've got SharePoint running locally here on my Windows 7 machine. And I can call that service Blue Yonder Data. And once I have that service reference in place, I can add a little bit of code to call that service and pull back some list data. And I'll do that with a code snippet. Excellent. So let's get some things out of the way here so we can see what's going on. Great. All right. All right. So we've got Blue Yonder Data. That's our service that we just created. We're using the team site data data context. We're pointing it to the right URI. We're setting all the right credentials. And then we're pulling back the complaints historical list. This is a list that you might have seen in a previous demonstration where we archive away completed customer complaints. What we're doing now is we're taking that data and plugging it directly into Excel so that our information workers can see that information and act on it. So we've got everything set up. Let's hit F5 here to deploy this into Excel. Visual Studio is going to open up Excel in the context of the debugger. I could set a breakpoint here if I'd like to actually sort of break in and out of the customization, the add-in that I just created. But instead, let me just pull it up by going into the ribbon. Now, as I mentioned, I've used the ribbon designer to go and extend the Excel ribbon. I've got a customer relations tab here that I created. And I've got a button that I dragged and dropped in. And when I hit this button, it's going to load our add-in into Excel. You can see the data is being populated here in a nice grid for me. And I've got a chart that I can sort of move down here. And so I can see that data directly inside of the context of Excel. You'll notice that I've got sort of a breakdown of mileage level between platinum, silver, and gold. I as an information worker can see that we are actually treating our platinum people pretty well. We've got a lot more platinum complaints. And of the gold complaints, most of them take, you know, sort of 72 hours to complete. Now, rather than skimming over this data, I can get a summary by taking advantage of a new feature in Excel 2010 called Sparklines. And that lets me visually summarize the data that's in this chart, that's in this grid here. And I've got a chart that that helps me see that visually as well. So what have we done here? We've used Visual Studio 2010 to create a custom ribbon element, the customer relations element. We've dropped a button in, and we've loaded up some data that we pulled from SharePoint. So what have we done here in this demonstration? We've seen how we can leverage Visual Studio to create an Excel 2010 customization, an Excel 2010 add-in. And that add-in features a ribbon entry. That is the customer relations ribbon entry that we created. And it also features data that we're pulling directly from SharePoint through the Open Data Protocol, the OData Protocol, and dropping here into a familiar experience for our end information workers to interpret, synthesize, and act on that data. So we've seen three big things today. We've seen how you can connect people to data, you can enable rich visualizations, and you can go where your users are. And as a SharePoint developer, you can take your existing .NET development skills and apply them towards new SharePoint projects. I hope you agree with me that Visual Studio 2010 is going to enable developers of all stripes to be productive against SharePoint, and I look forward to seeing the applications that you build. Thank you.